Dish from Waitrose is an SE Creative Studio production.
Clarence Court is home to Britain's widest collection of free-range eggs since 1928. Our traditional heritage birds produce a distinctively rich and iconic yolk that takes home cooking from the ordinary to the extraordinary. Loved by chefs and favoured by foodies, each shell is stamped with its own royal crown. It's time for you to discover the wonderful world of fabulous eggs by fabulous birds. Clarence Court.
Our podcast might contain the occasional mild swear word or adult theme. Hello and welcome to Dish from Waitrose. I am Nick Grimshaw.
And I'm Angela Hartnett.
How are you today, Ange?
I'm very well, thank you, Nick. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Nice to see you.
Likewise.
Really nice to see your plus one as well today.
My plus one.
Yeah?
Nice little Betty Boo.
I love little Betty.
Yeah, I
Betty's,
know.
Betty's Angela's dog, who's so pretty. She's yeah. like, really, wow. She yeah. could be like a Hadid sister. I do think she's gorgeous.
Given what she cost me, I think I probably need to get her doing that.
Bit of modelling.
Bit of modelling.
How come she's come today? And do you just have like random days where you're like,
it's a random day today because she's not in doggy school and I don't want to leave her. It's a long day to leave her by herself.
Oh, yeah.
So I checked with the powers that be and they said yes.
I'd quite like to bring Stinky one day.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
Stinky's good. I've met Stinky.
Yeah, and Pig.
Yeah.
And maybe not two.
Why not? They're very.
She's quite. Would like eat a plug or something.
Okay,
like
yeah,
you've got
maybe.
To keep your eye on her.
Yeah. But they're not noisy. That's the only
no,
problem with Betty. If she wants a bit of attention, we'll hear that bark come
she's
through all the walls.
Mm. I just gave her a bit of Parmesan.
Yeah, she likes it.
Yeah, she really enjoyed that bit of cheese. Do you think she eats better than the average dog because you have better leftovers or better quality produce in your house?
I think probably better leftovers. And also my mum's involved in the whole thing.
Right.
I don't know what your mum's like with dogs, but my mum will sit there and pretend to be eating something, literally, and she'll just look you in the eye. And then the hand goes like that and it just flips. And the dog's literally, and then she goes, he's looking at me, she's looking at me, I've got to feed them, they're starving. I said,
they're not starving.
They just know you are weak, Mum. Mm. And you have no, because they don't come near me or Neil or my sister. Anyway, so Betty, now she knows you're a weak
link. I was trying to warm her up
to bond
with her, so I've given her a little bit of Parmesan.
Yeah, she's going to put on half a stone off. She's literally doesn't even weigh half a stone, she's so small.
Well, she's very cute. Yeah. We do have another guest, Nish Kumar. Is going to be with us.
Very excited.
And we love him. I also might feed him a bit of Parmesan.
Yeah, off your hands. Same hand you fed from Betty.
To see if he likes me. Before we get Nish in, I thought we could hear from a listener in Denmark.
Yeah.
Hi to Moon, who says, "Dear Angela and Nick, thank you for a lovely podcast.
Oh.
I had surgery on my hand last week for a condition called trigger finger, which I assure you is not as fun as it sounds.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
But it does, doesn't it? You imagine it's sort of like
trigger
that.
Finger.
Yeah.
She carries on. Sadly, this means that I can't do any cooking at the moment. However, I've spent all this week listening to the Dish episodes, getting lots of great ideas for when my handy's back in business. So I recently invested in a small air fryer.
Right.
Just because I thought, good way to get the kids into cooking a few things. I imagine Angela would never use one. Or would she?
I don't have one, but then I don't have a lot of gadgets anyway.
I would use one, but it's like, where's that going?
Yeah, it's just more stuff.
More stuff.
More
I don't
clutter.
Want any stuff.
I'm with you there.
I even want to like put the toaster away. Because I'm like, I just don't want like stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
You've got like a toaster, kettle, microwave, air fryer.
Yeah, too much.
It looks like
too
curry.
Much.
It's like too much stuff.
Yeah, we just have a toaster kettle. That's it. We don't have anything else is in a cupboard. The only other thing we have is like a Magimix, one of those, you know, mixers. That's it.
Yeah, I've got one of them. It's in
the cupboards.
Box.
Yeah, exactly. Like, comes
boxed.
Out when you need it. And then it goes
never.
Back in.
Anyway, so Moon's got one. She's going to try it out.
Yeah.
But my question is, what is Angela's favourite kitchen gadget and does she have any top chefy tips for using them?
Well, it's something you mentioned and I love it and it's called a microplane. And it's
microwave.
Basically... As yes, Nicholas. And as you so rightly called it, it's a grater on a stick.
I love it.
But you can grate oranges, zest stuff. You can do hard cheese. You
garlic,
can do garlic. You can do bits of dried fish, you know, if you want something, and pataga on top. It's brilliant. And so it's a great essential. We always, and most chefs have a microplane. In fact, most kitchens have a microplane these days.
Yeah, my mum got me one.
There you go.
And then I don't know how I did stuff without it.
I know.
I was like, bloody brilliant, this. Sharp as anything.
Sharp
as anything.
You've got to be watching. Yeah,
yeah, so watch your trigger fingers.
Yeah,
Moon.
Exactly, yeah. When they're back in action.
Right, should we get Nish Kumar in?
We should indeed.
All right, let's welcome our only guest that rhymes with the name of this podcast. On Dish, it's Nish Kumar. I see someone's doctored your menu there with a Sharpie. It's the Nish podcast.
I'm a huge fan of puns based around my name. So yeah, I'm thrilled. I've genuinely never been more excited to do a podcast in my entire life. Like, are you kidding me? Look at this menu. Oh my God. I went on off menu. I didn't even get a biscuit from those bellets.
Yeah, I mean.
I brought my own food there. I brought my own food.
What did you take them? And wine.
James loves sweet stuff.
Yeah, he absolutely loves
And I
sweet
knew
stuff.
He was either going to annihilate me because I didn't want a dessert. I wanted cheese.
Right,
so I was thinking ahead and I bought a dessert for him. So you before he poof, whips
and
me
And that
in
man
there.
Has... absolutely no integrity.
Oh,
so
none.
If you offer him a sweet, he'll immediately be like, I don't care what you say.
Yeah, exactly. Sweet wine and sweets. It was, you know, it was a joy.
Well, welcome. And we're, like you, very, very excited because Angela has handmade gnocchi. I'm buzzing. I'm so, so ready for
buzzing.
This. I'm so, so ready. Now, as a lot of great meals begin with a bread course.
Yeah.
And when we're doing our niche research, we found out the bread roll incident.
I am... umbilically connected for the rest of my life
Google
to bread,
bread
rolls.
And
can you come up?
Nish came up.
It's a tragedy because I love bread.
Yeah.
Somebody threw a bread roll at me when I was doing a comedy gig.
Disrespect.
It was absolute disrespect.
Yeah.
It really was an act of wanton disrespect. Yeah. So now, occasionally, I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but so it happened and it was in the news. And then maybe 2 weeks later, I was doing the best man speech at my friend Tom Neenan's wedding, who is a great comedian. And like, we went to university together and he was the head writer on the Mash Report. I've worked with him for years and years and years. And I was best man at his wedding. And the comedian Ahir Shah threw his bread roll at me.
Oh God.
But unfortunately, Ahir Shah is not particularly one of our more physically capable specimens.
God.
He missed and hit James Acaster in the face.
I feel that was fitting.
He tried to bread roll me during my speech, missed and hit Acaster square in the face.
Oh, I can imagine the Acaster response.
Oh my God.
He was furious.
Furious.
Brilliant.
Absolutely furious. If you were to throw, not that you ever would, Angela.
What's that?
As a chef, which bread roll do you reckon I'd have the sort of best sort of aerodynamic throw?
This one, it was a sort of like... crusty loaf thing.
Oh. Yeah.
It didn't, was not aerodynamic.
No.
And also, again, a lot of the people at that gig are sort of not necessarily God's gift to sport. Even the original bread roll in the room, like it didn't get anywhere near me.
No.
So I don't know if there is a good
bread
roll.
I reckon like a brioche is probably like the friendliest. That's the most jovial.
Because
I reckon it's light.
But it's quite airy, isn't
it? Quite airy. And I reckon it's more of a like boop.
It's sort of like, I feel like it would be like a paper plane. Like it would catch the breeze.
Yeah.
It would only happen if I was being bread rolled by the character Amelie from the film Amelie.
It's so what Amelie would throw.
You know, like you get a baguette like that, like the French stick. You get these mini ones.
Yeah.
And
right.
They'd have a little point. See, now this is my viciousness coming out here, you see. That would be like a little paper
like
aeroplane, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
be like
right.
A dart.
You could frisbee a nun at some
yes.
point. Like,
yes.
I think if you really whipped a nun, you could get it at some point.
Yeah. Shot put a crumpet.
It's a whole new Olympic sport, I feel. I think this should be introduced. We should have the Food Olympics now.
I'd
brilliant.
Like just to do an hour of this. And then just wrap it up. Talk to us about Hold the Front Page that you just did with Josh, which was just so good.
It was really, a really fun show to do.
Yeah.
So Josh Widdicombe and I went and worked for 6 local newspapers all around the country. And Josh is actually a qualified journalist. Like when I first met Josh, he was actually working on the sports desk at The Guardian and he had done the proper qualification But it turned out he'd not paid attention to any of it.
Yeah.
And I said to him, oh, so you must know how to do shorthand. And he said, oh, no, the lecture was at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday. So I just never went. Yeah. And it was really great fun. I'm a stand-up comedian. You travel around the country a lot of the time and you only see it through a particular prism. Mm. But when you get to go and work at local newspapers, you get to meet people. It's an interesting way to, like, interact with a part of the country. And also the people who work at those newspapers are amazing. Like, yeah. The journalists of the papers are really great. And it was supposed to be a kind of celebration of local news. Uh-huh. And the best way to celebrate somebody doing their job well is by sort of dispatching two idiots to do it, to show actually it's very, very difficult.
And it's really hard. I love a local news story,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Like, I really love... And I guess, like, the one show... Sort of like
that feels like that
feels like it has those sort of like random stories. Like, let's meet this lady who's got great
the
eyebrows.
The one show turn, like, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. The tonal shift on the one show, like yes. that. I've seen it up close, and it's like watching Van Gogh paint. Like the way that they can go from a story about somebody who had a botched blood transfusion to a cat that looks like Bob Holness. It's like, it is unbelievable. You get whiplash from watching it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is also responsible for my two favourite pieces of television of all time. One is Mel Brooks commenting on how weird the show is. And the other is the Cookie Monster wearing a poppy. Which, also, there's something about the fact that the other guest on the show is Chris Tarrant. I don't know why that makes it funnier, but it makes it so just much funnier. I think the Cookie Monster wearing a poppy is like, if you wanted to explain to somebody this is what the one show is, it's the Cookie Monster paying respect
really
to the people who died in World War I and World War II.
Hey, we're going to eat in a second. Yeah, and as mentioned, we do have gnocchi prepared by the one and only Angela Hartner. If we were coming round to your house for tea, talk us through what would happen. Who's cooking in your house?
Oh,
your girlfriend. She's a comedian as well.
She's a comedian as well, yeah. We actually went to Murano for her 30th birthday.
Oh!
We did, yeah. It was nice. So this is a real... Let me tell you, she is furious. She is absolutely furious about what's happening right now. But yeah, I'm very excited about this. I love gnocchi.
Do you remember when you first had it? I remember first having it and like blowing my and my sister's brains like, it's pasta, potato, what is it?
I actually remember where I was. This tells you, I was doing a gig at Cambridge University have these like really like amazingly fancy summer balls.
Right.
And sometimes they hire comedians to do them. You're often on at 2 a.m. and it's just a bunch of like incredibly hammered 19-year-olds wearing tuxedos for some reason. It looks like you've turned up to like an all child award ceremony. And so they asked me to do one, and it was probably like in about 2010, and the pay wasn't great. But my friend said, I've been to one of these before. We should definitely go because you should see these things. Mm. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, I've DJed at someone, then mad.
What is that experience like? Because
one's listening.
Yeah.
Everyone's paralytic. Like, people are being sick. Like...
Yeah, it's weird to know that I've potentially been heckled by someone who will be Prime Minister one day.
That's true.
That's a really, like, weird feeling. There was a gnocchi station. That was the first time I'd ever eaten it in my life.
Not pasta, gnocchi.
Yeah, I grew up pretty comfortably middle class. And when I walked in there, I felt like Billy Joel in the Uptown Girl video. Like, it was really, like, you walk in, you see a bunch of people with their tuxedos, and you're like, ooh, But I do remember it being.
And how was it?
I mean, delicious.
Lots to live up to, Ange.
The pressure now.
The pressure is on.
I got a slight suspicion this is going to be better. A slight suspicion.
Is pasta, but made of potato?
No, it's not pasta. It's
just
potato. Yeah.
It falls under the pasta bracket.
But it's like a pasta course.
Yeah.
It's a substitute, like risotto is. That's it. So you can have risotto instead of pasta, you can have gnocchi instead of pasta. Okay. But it's not actually pasta.
How does one make it? And bear in mind, you're talking to somebody who literally, what happens if you come around my house for tea? What happens is I whip out Deliveroo and start wow. taking straw polls of who wants what.
So you boil your potatoes in the skin, boil them till they're really soft, and then peel them, and then mash them through what you call a ricer. Ooh. Or a moolie, so it comes out like this sort of string, if you like.
Like the Play-Doh machine.
I don't know what the Play-Doh machine
you
know, is.
Yeah, Play-Doh like you put Play-Doh
you
through.
It, you
yeah,
hair for Play-Doh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah. Very much like that.
That's fantastic, because that's a dynamic. Yeah. Like, I might not be a chef, but I'm a broadcaster. And what we've just seen there, that is a dynamic. That is a double act,
that's
if I've ever
works.
Seen one.
We can make it work.
Yeah. You push the potato through the Play-Doh machine. You make the Play-Doh
comes
hair.
Comes out blue and orange and pink. Yeah.
So once you've made the Play-Doh hair.
Then once you've made your potato.
Yeah.
Then you mix it with Parmesan, eggs and flour.
Ooh.
Blend it all together so it forms a dough. And then you roll it into these lovely little gnocchi that look like this.
Oh, my God.
Would you ever serve that as just, like, because once it's the big ball, I wonder what would happen if you just baked the whole thing and yeah. sliced it.
No, this that would, just wouldn't, I don't think it would hold.
No, it wouldn't hold.
This is part of the reason why I'm a terrible booking for this. I have no idea what's been said since the food appeared. So, since I got sight of some food, everything
blacked
else just
out, you know,
blacked out. It's done.
And what you use this little thing, which I thought was initially a doorstop.
It forms the shape of the gnocchi. The whole point of it is that you form these little holes and wow. The sauce goes in there. So ooh. You roll it like that and crush it in a slightly just to give that little hole.
Oh, and then the
yeah.
sauce rests
the sauce
in
sits
it.
In it. Oh,
wow.
You see?
Oh, I love that.
You pretend to know nothing, but you do know stuff.
Oh, I love that. Like a little cup yeah. for the sauce. Would you ever attempt anything like that, Nish? Have you ever tried to make pasta from scratch? I did. It took all day.
Did you really? I mean, I think where my cooking skill is currently would be like a dog challenging Kylian Mbappe to a game of five-a-side. Like, it was... I've got so many steps between where I am and...
Gnocchi.
Yeah, and Play-Doh Gnocchi Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you see, I think you're saying that, but you've... adventurous. I mean, I read your dad fed you a brain curry. No?
Yeah, yeah. I've eaten brain curry, yeah. Listen, I'm one of the great eaters of
yeah.
our
age. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of the great yeah. eaters.
You can feed you anything. That. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I had brain masala in a restaurant in Mumbai. Mm-hmm. That yeah. was like a sort of food stand. It's called Buddy Mia's, and it was like a food stand behind the Taj Hotel. And it's like some of the best food I've ever eaten in my life. The thing with Mumbai and Delhi particularly is like the street food is insane. Mm. But it's important to go with people who live there because they'll be like, that's going to give you diarrhea. That's going to give you diarrhea. That stand, the guy washes his hands. Bang, you're in.
Yeah, we're on.
That street food in Mumbai and Delhi is like, it's kind of unbeatable. And Buddy Mia's, the guy is incredible because like, he was a cook at this restaurant. He asked for more money and the guy was like, I'm not going to give you more money. People come here for the venue, not your food. And he then opened a stand. You know, like the Spite Store series of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He basically invented the Spite Store. Like
love
he
it.
Opened a stand next to it. And obviously everybody went to the stand because what people want is the food.
Yeah, the food.
And the food is so good.
Yeah.
And there's like one grill that's veg and one grill that's non-veg. And the lamb kebabs are incredible. I haven't been there in nearly 10 years, but I assume it's still there. It was insane.
Some of the best
popular.
Food I've had has been in India and in those sort of back streets. There was one time we were by, I think it was by the Red Fort. You know, there was this just massive oven and the chef was just sitting there, just literally on the side of the oven, doing all the breads, you know. But exactly that, I was with one of my chefs who was from Mumbai. A vada pav, isn't it? The thing you have, you know, that you would
that?
Like. It's a soft bread roll with fried potato, onions, spice, all just like a potato roll. Yeah. It's delicious.
Oh, it's delicious. Yeah, yeah. And pav bhaji is like, that bread is just like, I think it's just soaked in ghee.
Yeah.
And then it comes with this kind of, like a sort of tomato-y curry thing. And it's absolutely delicious.
Angela, the gnocchi is here. Wow. So what is this? It's gnocchi.
Gnocchi with spicy chili red pepper pesto.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That is delicious.
Oh, it's really melty in the mouth.
Mm. It is, see? Light.
Mmm. Angela.
Not too much flour, you see? That's the key. Not overworked.
Like, when you're making pasta, Ange.
Yeah.
On the scale of like favourite to least favourite, where does gnocchi come? Like how much of a faff is it?
Oh, making it. I think it's as easy as pasta. I think it's easier actually.
I think even the word easy being bandied around with making pasta.
It's wrong.
We have to say there's a skill gap.
I did try once. Did it with my friend Anna. And Anna's a really good cook and she loves cooking and she's got all the kitchen stuff and she's patient and she's always cooking something.
Yeah.
And it was like at a time in my life when I was a mess in my 20s. And I was like, got bored halfway through and then got sort of drunk. So it wasn't like a great experience and I've never made it since. But we did put like the strings up in the kitchen and hang the spaghetti off the string and all of that. But now I'm at a better place. I feel like maybe this is quite fun to do, make some gnocchi of an afternoon.
Of an afternoon,
if not, you can just go to Waitrose and buy it.
It's absolutely delicious.
Really good. How did you do that? Because that sauce is like, it's not runny, is it? It's sort of like chunky bits of pepper.
Tomato and peppers in there, and then a chili pesto. Instead of making it with basil, you'd have put nuts in there, parmesan, and loads of chili and red peppers as well.
Wow.
All blended together.
Wow. That is absolutely so delicious. Great.
I feel like I should never eat again.
Oh, gosh. Too much.
No, that was good. Like, it's that so melts light. Potato and cheese melting in your mouth with a little bit of chili.
That's why. Cheese perfect. And potato, you can't beat that.
Absolutely perfect. And for me, a little kick of chili as well.
Little
always
kick
welcome.
Of chili, always welcome. Perfect. We always like a little kick of chili.
Yeah. Love a little bit of kick of chili, yeah. Do you think your chili intolerance rises and rises and rises?
At this point, my mouth and stomach are lead-lined. Like, my partner is always saying, like, do you think you might have killed most of your taste buds? Like, for somebody who doesn't cook a lot and who doesn't have an extensively stocked kitchen, I've basically got like the hot sauce range. Is astonishing.
So every hot sauce around.
Oh my god, I've got every hot sauce.
So is it no cooking at all at home? Is it honestly just takeaways?
No, we got better during the pandemic
because the takeaways were closed.
I mean, it is a source of shame for me, like, just because, like, you know, like, I come from a family that really like prizes home cooking. It's a big part And we're a food family. Like, my grandfather ran curry houses in Leicester in the 70s and 80s. And, like, you know, my grandmother's an incredible cook. My mum's an incredible cook. And so it is, like, a source of... And it is me, specifically, missed. Yeah. Like, no, because my brother is a really brilliant cook. And also, my brother cooks Indian food well as well. I really need to go on a course or something.
Or just go see your family.
Where could I do this course?
But it's really difficult because, like, if you ask my grandmother how much of anything you put in anything, she just goes, enough. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, when somebody's doing something completely instinctive and she knows when something's not enough or too much. And my girlfriend's brother is also a really good cook. And she always says that there's a thing where he was basically like, you've got a lack of acid in this, so you just need to squeeze a lemon in it. And she was like, how do you know that? How do you know that? What are you, Breaking Bad? Like, what is this?
But in Italy, they call it all'occhio. You know, they do everything by the eye. My grandmother never weighed anything, and it was just, she would look at it, and just know that that was enough flour, that was enough egg, that was
You're like that, though, because when we've asked things before, I think you think I'm taking the piss when I'm saying, like, how did you make that dressing? And she's like... And I'm like, no, seriously, how did you do it? And she's like, you just do it.
So you never worked in any of the restaurants when you were a kid? You weren't farmed
out? No, I was too young. My granddad ran two Indian restaurants, and then his last job before he retired in like the early 90s was he actually ran a proper greasy spoon.
Brilliant.
Which I see as like a real victory for the integration of an immigrant community. If you can go from like running curry houses to running a greasy spoon in Leicester. But that was probably in the kind of early 90s when I was about 7 or 8. And I remember going to, we used to call it the CAF. And I really didn't know that was like, that meant cafe. I just thought, you know, when you're that age, you hear a word and you go, well, that's a CAF. But yeah, it was then he stopped working. But before then, like, all my first birthdays were in sort of Indian restaurants that my granddad was running. But yeah, it's my grandmother was the serious cook.
And is there any like fantastic grandma recipes that have stayed in the family, obviously ones you've ignored, but like, is there anything that your family like still make? And it's like grannies, whatever.
The thing that everybody's trying to nail is, so we're from Kerala in India, and there's fish in Kerala. It's like a massive thing. There's a lot of coastal cities and fish cooking is a big thing. And there's like a Kerala fish curry that my grandmother makes with, it's very heavily spiced, but lots of coconut milk. Yeah. And as a lot of the cooking in that part of India is. And it's just some, nobody has ever successfully managed to get it the way that she gets it. And because when you try and get her to explain it, she's like, you've not put enough stuff in, or you put too much stuff in. And everyone's like, amounts, grams, kilograms. Yeah. What does this mean? And she's like, you know, it is that, it's by the eye. Like, she's like, she can, she can literally look at it and go, that's, you've put too much of something in there. And, but that fish curry is unbelievable. And she made it once when we were at my uncle lives in Australia, and we were in Australia, and she got some like fresh fish from the Sydney fish market and made that fish curry. And you sort of realize that at this point, she's not quite been working with the same quality of ingredients. Yeah. And that fish curry, I have a distinct memory of me and my uncle, like literally with bread, just white bread, like wiping the pan.
Nice.
Because it was so delicious.
So good. Yeah. That could be the next show. So like you trying to remake your grand's.
This is the thing, like, because my parents are constantly suggesting television show ideas for me. It's a devastating indictment of me as a person, because they're always like, is there a TV show where you could learn how to drive and learn how to cook? And what you realize is, what they're suggesting is there an infrastructure by which you could become a functioning adult? Is there any a string of televisual systems? They've given up saying, could you change?
Yeah.
And they've now jumped to, is it possible for a television company to pay you to eventually scrape the bare minimum of what people expect from a, let's not beat around the bush, 37-year-old adult?
Now, gnocchi, fair to say, is a dumpling.
It is, yeah, you're right.
Anish, you are a dumpling aficionado?
I'm an absolute dump master. I'm an absolute dump master.
Huge dump master. Now, there's a lot of dumplings around the world.
A lot of
dumplings. We have a map here.
Wow.
Which I love that someone's made a dumpling map.
Yeah.
Any of these that you have tried that you're like, yeah, I love a fufu?
I am a big fan of Xiaolong Bao, which is the soup dumplings. Because when you kind of bite into them, the first time you have them, it is a risk for burning your mouth because this kind of hot jet of water shoots out of it. So you have to eat it quite carefully. I distinctly, eating a char siu bao, like, is one of those like things you ate when you were a kid that as you're eating it, you go, I think fish fingers may not be the be-all and end-all.
Wait.
I think I love fish fingers, but I think there might be a big world out there.
It's more to life.
It's that red pork. Yeah. When you bite into that kind of pillowy dumpling pastry and then like that kind of dark red pork, it's absolutely...
I like the char siu bao, like the with the pork. Yes. It's like a cloud.
It's very delicious.
There's always like a bit of paper stuck to it.
Oh yeah, I ate the paper. I love that. I do like fufu. I love momos. That's like a sort of Himalayan.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There's really good ones at Darjeeling Express in London. They're really delicious. Obviously, I love a samosa. Love them. Yeah, and love a pierogi. Love a pierogi. Eastern European dumplings.
Really, really
delicious. Like I've had dinner in Poland, and they just bring out big plates on it. It's delicious. Yeah. I remember the first time I had ravioli. This is why you should always have friends from different cultures.
Yeah.
Because I was about 4 years old and I went to my school friend's house. And, I had only eaten Indian food and fish fingers.
Yeah.
And pizza. That, as far as I knew, those were the predominant foodstuffs. Yeah. And my mum said, what did you have for lunch? And I said, his mum gave us, I think they were hot tea bags. My mum was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, yeah, no, they were hot tea bags. And also, like, because my parents gave me too much self-esteem, I was not backing down from it. Like, I was like, no, they were hot tea bags.
I know where they were.
Yeah, I know. I think I know a hot tea bag when I'm served one, mother.
Let's talk about Pod Save the UK, which is a brand new political podcast.
At last, A male comedian has a podcast.
Yes.
For too long, male comedians have been boxed out of podcasting.
It's been a long time. Tell us how it all came about, this show, because of course, you know, you're a political comedian. You have an opinion or
I've got an opinion. I've got an opinion and the brazen self-confidence to share it with anyone who listens.
Come on.
I got approached by Crooked Media, which is an American podcasting company that was founded by ex-Obama staffers. Yeah. Who started a show called Pod Save America. And I was at one of their live shows in London and somebody dropped out of the second show and they needed a replacement. And a friend of mine from America called me and said, are you free this evening to do the show? And I was like, not only am I free, I'm literally sat in the hall.
I'm here.
Yeah, right now. And so I did the show with them. And so I had, I knew them. And then a couple of years later, they sort of contacted me and said, we're thinking of launching a British show. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. And they said, we're thinking of you hosting it. And I was like, that's a terrible idea. You should get someone who knows more stuff. But no, they were pretty hell-bent on it being me in spite of my own objections. It's a show about British politics and I host it with my friend Coco Khan, who's a journalist. So because I sort of thought, I need to get somebody qualified. We're trying to talk to as many people who understand what's going on as much as possible. Yeah. You know, I, in spite of some things that may or may not have been said by prominent members of the government, I don't think that this country has had enough of experts. Yeah. And so I think as much as possible, we want to have people who can understand things, explain them to us. And there's no point in us pretending to actually be experts. Yeah. You know, the great thing about the Pod Save America guys is they worked in the White House. So when they talk about trying to pass a debt ceiling bill, they know how the mechanics of that is going to work. What we're trying to do is say, look, we're people who live in this country. We're interested in politics. We're engaged with it. Can somebody explain to us what in the name of God is going on?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, what in the name of God is going on and how things could possibly improve. I think, like, for a long time, like, I've obviously made a lot of jokes about the news and I'm interested now in seeing if we can find people who could offer some solutions to the problems that I've written jokes about.
You can get that right now, can't you?
Yeah, it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay.
And in a couple of places you don't. Wow.
Can we talk about, we don't really know what this is, but our wonderful producer Claire told us about Nude with Nish.
Nude with Nish is a fictitious TV show that was created by the listenership of a different podcast called The Bugle.
Right.
A few years ago, I have young cousins who got to an age where they were independently able to access the internet. And at this point, they found out that I had a Wikipedia page. Quite soon after they found out I had a Wikipedia page, they found out it was possible for anyone to edit Wikipedia. They subsequently played Merry Hell on my Wikipedia page and said that I was, like, best known as Madam Lily, which is the name that they've called me since the older one was 4 years old. And said that I weighed 10,000 pounds and every morning I stick a potato up my own butt.
So some of it was true.
So some of it was true, listen. A stopped clock is right twice a day. But then I mentioned this on Andy Zaltzman's show, The Bugle, of which I'm a sort of a frequent contributor. And I sort of forgot that the listenership of that podcast is both engaged and tech savvy. And so they did so much defacing of my Wikipedia page that my Wikipedia page can now only be changed by approved Wikipedia moderators. Oh, it's like a bunch of, like, prime ministers and presidents and me that have to have their Wikipedia pages protected. And mine don't need to be protected from cyber attacks. They need to be protected from the listenership of a podcast that I am a contributor to. One of the pieces of... there were various fake TV shows that I was said to have hosted, and one of them was Nude with Nish, an all-naked chat show. So that... unfortunately, now, that is forever linked to me on the internet.
Well, I can't wait to watch Nude with Nish.
Giggling straight after.
I feel like talking about on another podcast is going to set more people off.
Yeah.
But good luck is protected.
Well, now they can't because my Wikipedia page is like Fort Knox.
You can't get in there, okay? Nish, before we say goodbye, we have an end of a show question for you. Sealed in this envelope, neither Angela nor I have read this question.
But your nieces and nephews have.
Yeah.
Your niece and nephew wrote it. Yeah. You can open it and read it to yourself. If you want to answer it, then you can win a Waitrose goodie bag.
I'm not sure I've ever been asked a question that I've not been comfortable answer. Nish, for a Waitrose goodie bag, all you have to do is answer this question. You are friends with Ed Gamble. You are friends with James Acaster. Are you secretly annoyed at how successful Off Menu is? And also, underneath it says, because we are.
Give us time. We're coming for those two.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that it occupies the two of them, because I worry what they would do with too much free time. The only thing that I'm furious about, and I have expressed this to both of them, is that they're doing the Royal Albert Hall live. And for some reason, I would be happy with them doing the O2, but for some reason, the Royal Albert Hall, where Jimi Hendrix and Bob Dylan perform, the idea of those two clowns asking people if they want to eat poppadoms or bread on the stage at the Royal Albert Hall has pushed me over the edge.
Like, people watching that in, like, a royal balcony funny.
Yeah.
Like, in
there's
a
people,
box.
There's people going to be sat in a royal balcony. The last time I went to the Royal Albert Hall, I saw Ravi Shankar perform. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, these are, like, these are icons, legends of music.
Of course.
Who've moved music forward and done things that challenge our perceptions of what art can and can't be. And now James Acaster's going to be there going, I'm a genie, do you like sandwiches?
So should we all go, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should go.
Yeah. Oh, I've got my ticket.
Yeah, we're going. Well, congratulations, you win the goodie bag.
Yeah.
You win the goodie bag.
All right.
Oh. Here we go.
Oh, it's a heavy one today.
Oh, my God, it's a really heavy goodie bag.
Heavy one. And Nish, thank you so much for coming round.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
There's, the heavy thud was a glass bottle full of alcohol.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, it was. And Nish Kumar, everybody. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Coming up next week on Dish, we are going to be joined by Charlotte Church.
I did a duet with Usher, and I had no recollection of it. I was like 15. I don't know. I remember they were talking, and she was like, oh, I remember you did that lovely duet with Usher. And I was like, no. When did I duet with Usher? She was like, you remember in that parade thing they used to do in New York? You and Usher did the duet. Couldn't believe it.
Remember.
I love Usher.
Yeah. You were there.
I'm chuffed.
If you would like to recreate today's dish for your friends or family or maybe a stranger in the street, head to waitrose.com/dish recipes. That is where you'll find all the meals we've ever made on the podcast.
Follow Dish wherever you get your podcast so you'll get it delivered to your device every week. And if you enjoy it, please leave us a great review.
If you don't, just listen to something else. We can't all have a Michelin star chef in the kitchen, but you can get some Michelin star advice. Email your questions for Angela, whatever they are, to dish@waitrose.co.uk.
Waitrose, food to feel good about.